Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday, September 4th edition of Byers & Company. We're live in the Palatial Studios. State Representative Bill Mitchell will join us, Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports, and the Redbird Report with Mike Claiborne. It all starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here live on a Tuesday. Hope you're having a great start to your work week. Back after the three-day weekend, we have the full Labor Day Pops video coming from last night. Packed house at Hickory Point Golf Course for Sergey and the crew as they put on an incredible concert. We also have the Arthur Cheese Festival, part of our Hot 25. That video is up as well if you'd like to check it out at nowdecatur.com. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports, and we'll check in with Mike Claiborne about the Cardinals' resurgence, although it's been a bit of a slide. How many have we lost in a row now?
Three
in a row? Is that are you worried now, or are you back?
No. Okay. I'm waiting to see exactly what they develop into still at this point.
But it's a little bit late to be developing.
Yeah, I know.
September 4th,
that's
right?
Kind of what I thought.
All right. We have tickets to give away courtesy of J.L. Hubbard Insurance and Bonds. It is my great pleasure to welcome State Representative Bill Mitchell, who joins us here as a member of the Illinois House of Representatives. You are, is it the 101st district now?
It is.
You started out in the 87th district, is that correct?
I started out 102nd.
Okay, it was 102nd, then the
87th. Then 101.
All right. I'm going to pull that microphone just a little bit closer if you don't mind. All right. So the map's been redrawn then three times in your career?
Correct, yes.
Look at this picture of you on Wikipedia. Believe that?
That's how young you
look. Yeah, look at that. You look like a kid. How many years in Springfield?
39 then.
How many years in Springfield?
Oh, it'll be by the end time I end, it'll be 20.
20 years. All right. So when I started this show, and you were at the very beginning of your political career, you were a serving Decatur City Councilman, right. Macon County Republican Chairman. You were the Mayor Pro Tem, I believe, for
right.
a short period.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yes.
2 years. So you went to school at Eastern Illinois University. Mm-hmm. You got a degree in political science. Is politics what you always wanted to do?
Yeah, that's always what I wanted to do. Then I worked for Edgar. That's what my job was. And then I went into the General Assembly.
All right. So has it been, if you look back over the 20-plus years of doing this, are you satisfied? I mean, has it been a satisfying career?
Well, that's a good question, a hard question. It's been personally satisfying. I've certainly enjoyed it. I'll miss people. Been in politics a long time, been in elective office now, almost 30 years. So I'll miss that. It's been disappointing the last several years.
Yeah, but it's not been easy to be a politician these days.
No, I mean, Springfield is not, it's underperformed, you can say, over the last.
All right, so is it really different today than it was 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
In what way?
Oh, gosh. Well, first of all, you didn't have the financial problems. I mean, governors, even George Ryan, when I first, and I served under, I worked for Jim Edgar, then my first governor was George Ryan. You can say a lot of bad things about George Ryan, but he did govern. And the last several governors haven't been good in terms of governing. They really haven't been candid with the people of Illinois. Okay, if you want this much government, you'll have to pay for it.
Okay, so what's the difference then between you walk through George Ryan, Blagojevich, you know, Pat Quinn, Bruce Rauner? Is it really the governor? To me, the governor seems to have less power.
Yeah, the governor of Illinois, it's kind of a misnomer because the governor of Illinois constitutionally is a very powerful governor. Whether they use that power well or not, I don't know. But, I mean, for instance, the governor has a line item veto. The governor has a reduction veto. Those are types that the president of the United States does not enjoy at all. It's part of the talent is governing, and they have not governed very well.
Okay, is that a sign of a lack of political intelligence on behalf of the governors, or is that a legislature that's sort of under 40-plus years of Mike Madigan? Sure. I mean, it's hard for me to blame. I'm not a huge Bruce Rauner fan and everything he does, but it's hard for me to look at the last 2, 3, 4 years and say that the state of Illinois isn't in the shape it's in because of Bruce Rauner.
I don't think that's the case. But I think I said in the last several governors have been disappointing to me. But, you know, Madigan, I've been in the House for 20 years and, you know, have had very few conversations. I've never voted for him for Speaker of the House of Representatives. Madigan is what Madigan is. He gets his power a derivative of the Democratic caucus. When the Sue Scheer votes for him, I don't. As Madigan always says, we're appropriators. That means the General Assembly appropriates money, and usually governors trim it back. Now, I don't think that's a responsible thing. You should not pass unbalanced budgets, which they, of course, have over the years. But governors have to say, okay, if you want this much service, then you're going to have to pay for it. And they have not said that.
Okay, so but they've made Bruce Rauner, you know, public enemy number one for being too tough. What else? I mean, and you're suggesting
explain
I think
too tough.
Well, I mean, that's what the narrative has been put on him by Democrats. He's cutting this. He's cutting that. He doesn't care about this. He doesn't care about that.
Governor Rauner is he hasn't cut enough.
Okay, but you know what they're doing to him right now. His unfavorables are upside down.
Yes, part of that is his responsibility. I mean, going 736 days without a budget.
But wasn't that by being tough?
I think that's by being irresponsible.
Okay, but couldn't he say I was trying to do exactly what Bill Mitchell just said I should do, which is be tough?
He didn't use the tools that I just described. He didn't use a reduction veto.
Okay.
He's never used a reduction veto.
Why?
I don't know. You'll have to ask him. He has not line-itemed things out of the budget. I mean, you cannot say, and I don't want to be overcritical, Governor Rauner, but you can't say you're a fiscal conservative and then say, oh, we're going to pay for abortions in the state of Illinois. Even when the Democrats had the General Assembly and the governorship, they didn't do that. So, I mean, I don't think he can say he's a fiscal conservative.
Okay, that seems to be maybe more of a moral issue or
I think it's both.
Okay, well, I mean, to many people.
Yeah, I mean, to me it's a moral issue and a fiscal issue. I mean, Governor Edgar was pro-choice, but he never said, okay, taxpayers are going to have to pay for people's abortions. Pat Quinn didn't. Rod Blagojevich didn't. George Ryan didn't. Governor Rauner did, and that was a grave disappointment.
Okay, did he do that to sort of win back some popularity or to try to buy back some sort of, you know, because his internal numbers are horrible. You know, one thing that Madigan...
He's less popular in Illinois than Trump.
He truly is. And so is Madigan, by the way.
Oh, he's the worst.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not just one side or the other. No. But it seems to me like we have this battle like the lesser of two evils. That's what we have in politics anymore, right? I mean, we don't have anybody it's we're inspired to vote for. It's just sort of we'll pick this guy or this gal over this guy or this gal because they're the lesser.
You probably could say
evils.
That 20 years ago, because the Americans, and that's probably a good thing, they don't focus on politics. So it is the lesser of two evils. What I'm saying is that governors should at least be candid with the people of Illinois. And let me give you an example, if I may. I mean, everyone's talking about how great the education reform package is. And it might be. But what they're not talking about is going to be very, very costly. Just in the next 3 years, it's going to require $1 billion of additional money. Now, I'm kind of familiar with the state budget. I don't know where you're going to find that $1 billion unless you have to cut something. And the governor hasn't cut anything like $1 billion. So, I mean, that's fine. If you want these programs, then pay for them and be honest with them. Okay, we're either going to have to cut services, and what are you going to cut? A, B, or C?
But that just seems to be an anathema. I mean, no one in Springfield actually does math that way.
Then that's unfortunate.
No, I mean, it is unfortunate, but that's what they've always done. And I think they've always been able to kick that can down
so much
the road.
You know, the last governor, which is a trivia, what's the last governor that's actually reduced the state budget? You wouldn't think this would be George Ryan.
Yeah.
But he had to.
Yeah, but George Ryan also had a different sort of relationship with the Democratic Party in the state of Illinois. Did he not? I mean, there was a deal to shut out Glenn Pashard to give George Ryan. I mean, it was a whole different time then.
It was. We weren't nearly in the fiscal problems we're in.
No, but I bet it was. He had a more comfortable relationship with the Chicago Democrats than Bruce Rauner does. Maybe even more than Pat Quinn did.
A creature of the legislature. You can say that's for good or that's for ill. But he was Speaker of the House. He knew how the General Assembly worked.
Yeah, he's also lining his pockets from.
Yeah,
know,
I mean,
Secretary of State employees.
Certainly was. I mean, Jim Edgar knew how things worked. Jim Thompson learned how things worked.
But it was a different time, though, right? I mean, I know we like to say things are still the same, but it was a different... 20 years ago was a different time. Politics was not as confrontational and as mean-spirited and as...
Certainly not. I mean, you can...
Superficial as it is today.
Social media contributed to that, things like that. But, it wasn't... But we didn't have the information as readily available as you have it right now.
Yeah, but that you know what? People don't want to dig and actually do the research and get the actual information.
But part
They'd
of the,
rather
that's
be
our job.
Superficial. I get that. I think it's everybody's job.
A legislator's job is to say, okay, this is what the state budget, and I know it's very boring, but if you want the two biggest items in the state budget are education and health care, and you're going to have to cut it.
All right, let's go back to when you first ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
That was considered to be an ugly campaign. By today's standards, I think it would just be normal, right?
Mm-hmm. It was certainly. I remember when I ran it, I spent $300,000, and that was astronomical. And my opponent spent maybe $400,000.
All right, so but $700,000, there won't be that much spent in either one of our state rep races.
You spend, not locally, but in competitive races. Last year, I mean, you spent over maybe one district, we spent $3 million.
Okay, but there's very few of those districts left. That's
and
the
that,
point.
That's due to large part to the map problem.
That's what I'm saying. I in some ways, the money is less today in my mind than it was because there are fewer competitive races. There's fewer competitive districts. I don't know why. I mean, I look at Andy Menard, you know, has got, you know, $600,000. I mean, that's considered an astronomical sum versus his opponent. And maybe the only map that is sort of still, I guess if you just looked at the map, would say that's fairly competitive. If you look at Dan Calkins versus Jim McMillan, or you look at Sue Scheer versus whatever the guy's name is running against her, there's no race there. They don't have to raise anything because those seats are already guaranteed.
And that's just because of the map. And so if you have redistricting reform, which really would be the biggest reform I can see down the road, is make districts more competitive, because competition is not a bad thing.
All right, so why have you enjoyed a pretty non-competitive district for most of your political career?
Well,
under the power of the Democrats.
The Democrats gave it because they always wanted, I'm adjacent to Decatur, so they always wanted to make the Decatur seat more Democratic, and so they would give, they didn't care about me, they just wanted to give whomever, whether it's Julie Curry, Bob Flyder, or now Sue Scheer, a Democrat district.
Yeah, but why not go after you? You know, the way they've gone after some Republicans.
Well,
I mean, they basically drew Duane Nolan out of a seat.
Well, they, I mean, in 2003, my district was 80% new.
Yeah.
I was put with two other, every reapportionment district, I've been put with other Republicans. It's just, I happen to be in a, or Lucker, I've survived. But they've always put me with other Republicans. Basically, it's because they wanted to make Decatur more Democratic.
Is that all of it?
Well, that's,
I mean, you've had some unusual people that have backed your political career.
Well, there was, no one ever told me what my legislative district was going to look like. I just got it when you when
No,
you
I realize that. But I'm saying, you know, when was the last time you had an opponent?
Like 2 years ago.
I mean, when was the last time you had a real opponent?
Probably my first race.
Okay, right? Lee Holzhap, 20 years ago.
Yeah, but 40% of the time, I had an opponent.
Okay, but I'm saying a real opponent.
Right, right. I mean, and that's due to, in great extent, to the legislative map.
All right, but Bob Flyder had an opponent like every time. I mean, you know, I mean, there was somebody lined up to run against him. For whatever reason, the Democrats didn't, they sort of let you be you.
Hopefully you did your job in terms of that I got around my district. I worked my district hard. I tried to, at least.
But you had a different style. I mean, not everyone has the same style.
No, of course not.
I mean, you're not the public sort of guy. I mean, you're not the guy who shows up at every ribbon cutting or does all the stuff that a lot of these folks do.
I did my share, but certainly not in the last few years.
That's not a pejorative. I'm just saying as a description, you weren't the guy who showed up to get your picture taken.
I tried to be seen in the district as much as I could. I tried to do a good job.
Yeah.
I'm certainly... had my faults.
All right, back to the original question then. Satisfying career, what are you proud of? You look back over 20 years.
Clinton was the most, the Clinton power plant thing.
Okay.
Because that was the most tangible I felt that could have shut down.
Is that a long-term solution or is that a temporary solution?
10-year solution.
Yeah.
Hopefully maybe the things will correct in terms of the energy industry that they won't need that. I mean, it's government involved.
The way we subsidize energy is beyond my grasp. I don't understand.
I learned a lot during that period, because the bill originated, the Clinton power plant bill originated in the House, so I worked lots of hours, so I learned a lot about the energy industry.
How bad would that have been for Clinton in particular, but just for the entire surrounding?
County, but even for here in Macon, I mean, you had people here, I mean, Richland Community College got $1 million from the power plant in terms of revenue, so it would have been horrible.
All right. So do you regret spending your life doing this?
No.
I mean, as you look back, just, I mean, nothing in your control, just the way Springfield is, the way the state is, do you feel like you've spent 20 years sort of like, you know, banging at windmills, because of the system?
Good question. No, I don't regret anything. I mean, there's certain things in my life, of course, I regret. But I regret that we've had a lack of leadership in Illinois. That's what I do regret.
All right. Speak honestly to me about the Republican Party in the state of Illinois. You know, I've had this argument a lot over the years. I think they're happy being backbenchers. I think they're happy
putting up weak candidates. I think that they're about as lame gets in the state of Illinois, the Republican Party. I mean, the Democrats have handed you everything you need. I mean, everything but the keys to the kingdom, and as far as a disaster way to run this state. Yet Republicans keep churning out mediocre candidates. They don't support the ones that seem decent. What is wrong with the Illinois Republican Party?
Well, I mean, for over the last 20 years, one of the things...
And you don't have to do anything anymore. January, you're done. No, you don't have to raise money for these people. You don't have to do anything.
Illinois has gotten more Democratic over the period of time I've been here, particularly in the suburbs. Excuse me.
Yeah, it has.
So that's a factor.
But let's look at Macon County, right? We talk about Decatur and being heavy Democrat. Yeah, if you look at presidential races...
Macon County as a whole is trended more Republican.
As a whole, for the party. But it also went in double digits for George W. Bush. It went double digits for Barack Obama. It went double digits for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I'd have to go back to 08, and I don't think Barack Obama carried Macon County in 12. And I just think he barely squeezed by in 08, but I'll have to go look at those numbers again. But it's certainly not a Republican county, but it's certainly a more of an independent county.
Yeah.
But when I got involved 30-plus years ago, it was a Democratic county.
It truly was. But what's happened over the last number of years? I mean, Dan Calkins. Yeah, I mean, as far as Republican candidates are concerned.
Gosh. I can only say in my caucus, let's say in my caucus, the House Republican caucus, we've got 50, let's see how many members. They have 67. We have 51 members. Okay?
Right.
So of those 51 members, more than half of them have been in office less than two terms. Okay, so you got an awful lot of new people. So if you call for term limits, we have them, and there's just attrition, turnover like that. So a lot of the people my colleagues are coming in don't know government very well, don't know Illinois' budget process, which they should get to know, and they just think they're experts, and I don't think they like government very well. So that they go off half-cocked and aren't very good politicians.
All right. But why is the Republican Party itself in Illinois? Do you think it's stronger or weaker than it was 20 years ago when you first entered the fray?
Much weaker.
Yeah.
I mean, much weaker because Governor Rauner has a part to play in this also because he just bought the party. I mean, when you just give, this is unheard of, when you give a caucus millions of dollars, I mean, George Ryan, Jim Edgar, Jim Thompson couldn't do that. They had to use the levers of the governorship, whether it's patronage, projects, things like that, that they'd have to do. And so they built a Republican Party. Now that there is certainly a top-down rather than a bottom-up party, well, there is no grassroots anymore. That's too bad. I think the Democrats are much better at building a grassroots party than we are.
Okay. What about local candidates, over the last few years? I mean, obviously, Sue Scheer is not popular. Yet she wins handily because it seems like the Republicans can't put somebody.
The district is just a very hard district for. I mean, it's got the inner city of Decatur and the inner city of Springfield and connective tissue to it. So, I mean, the district is drawn to be a Democrat, and it's hard. You had Cindy Dittrich, and she dropped out.
Now, if you ask her why she dropped out, she will tell you lack of support from the Republican Party.
Well, she might say that. Yeah, I understand that.
But yet Mike Bell had the full support of the Republican Party.
I don't know. I'm not the Republican Party, but when Cindy came and talked to me, I told her not to run.
Why is that?
Just because I said it's going to be a tough year. It's going to be hard. Can you raise? Anyone who comes to me and I said, can you raise for a General Assembly race, a House race, for instance, can you raise $100,000 on your own? I mean, because no one's going to give you any money unless you show that you can raise money independently. I would have told her the same thing. And if you can't raise $100,000, then just don't run.
Yeah, but how many Republican candidates over the last 10, 15 years have raised $100,000 by themselves?
Well,
here locally.
Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why can't...
I mean, you used to get... Well, for now, it's an unfortunate thing that you have an anomaly. You've got people going to the General Assembly, for instance, that are picked by the governor, for instance, put in there, and that they have very little community experience. I mean, when I got here, even though I was much younger, I'd been around, was chairman of the Republican Party, so you could hopefully raise some money and things like that. You had some contacts with the community. mean, that's what you need for a good candidate. I mean, I think the reliance on either Michael Madigan or Bruce Rauner is not a good thing for democracy.
But you're relying on somebody. I guess to me that's like sort of the moralistic splitting of hairs. Extent, I mean, you're relying on somebody buying
you. We've never had this to this extent.
Well, the Democrats have.
Because they've had Madigan.
Yeah.
But we haven't. And I don't think it's really good for democracy.
Okay, but isn't somebody buying you? I mean, with you, it was always to me.
You have to go out and you have to raise money. And obviously that was always a part of my job. I just thought was horrible. I didn't like it.
I get that. That's a normal feeling to have, by the way. Anybody that enjoys doing that, there's something wrong with it.
Some people do.
But you got strange donations. I mean, as a Republican, I mean, I never understood why the teachers union was a big fan of yours. I didn't understand why they were writing you checks after you decided not to run again.
But you had to build coalitions.
Yeah, but okay. But what's the difference between the teachers union writing a big fat check to you after you've announced you're not running again and Governor Bruce Rauner putting money into a race?
Well, I guess it would be the extent of the money, $10,000 you're talking about versus.
Yeah, but why would somebody give $10,000 to a person who's not running for office?
You'll have to ask them, but hopefully.
Oh, come on. They gave it to you. I'm asking you.
Hopefully they supported what I was doing in the General Assembly. I had a year and a half left to go. So to answer your question, what did I do with the money? What will I do with the money?
Yeah.
It'll go to the House Republicans.
So you're going to turn around and give it to somebody, but you're saying because it's less than what Rauner's giving, it's not part of the same problem?
Well, I mean, you got to raise money. I mean, to the extent you have to raise money.
But, Bill, you can't get a little bit pregnant. I mean, all of this is the same behavior.
You've got to raise money. There's a huge difference, but a huge chasm. Say, okay, I'm going to rely on Uncle Bruce for $1.5 million versus, and the maximum PAC can give you is $50,000. There's a big difference there. Between a million. I mean, that's what we've
done. Yeah, there's zeros. There's difference in zeros. There's no difference. But there's no difference in intent, though. I mean, the teachers, you just said,
in effect,
in effect, we're talking about just the number of zeros.
And that's a big difference in politics.
It might make a big difference, but it's the exact same thing.
So I have to go out and.
I mean, so you say, but you're not going to go do your job for the final year without the teachers giving you $10,000?
I didn't say that. I didn't solicit that. They sent it to me.
But didn't you go, why the hell are you giving me 10 grand?
No,
I'm not running.
I have to support other Republican candidates. I mean, I'm a system
Republican.
And
why would
leader.
The teachers want you to support other Republican candidates?
Hopefully they like what I've done in the General Assembly. You'll have to ask them, but, you know.
You never thought asking them? I mean, if somebody wrote me a $10,000 check, I think I would go, hey, why am I getting.
As a Republican leader, I have to give 40 grand to the House Republicans. I mean, that's part of my job.
Okay,
I have to.
But that 40 grand is okay because it's a smaller amount in your mind than what Bruce Rauner's doing.
Well, I think you're putting words in my mouth. What I'm saying is that there's a huge difference from what it used to be when you have to go out and piecemeal raise money to relying on one person. That's a huge difference.
All right.
I mean,
the only difference
we used to never have.
I got it. The only difference I see is that Mike Madigan's been doing that for years. I mean, Sue Scheer's stuff doesn't even come from Sue Scheer's office. It comes from the office of Mike Madigan. She doesn't even send her own press releases out. The Democrats have been doing it for years. The only difference is they've been successful. The Republicans.
Well, they have had the map.
Oh, yes.
That's a big difference.
But you guys had a brief opportunity to have the map. You had a brief opportunity to have the House. And what did you worry about? Who's going to have what office where?
In my 20 years, I've never been the majority. We've never had the map.
No, but you had that brief time where Mike Madigan was out of power. But what happened, though? I mean, to the best of your memory, what happened with the Republicans? Did they actually get to governing like they said they would do?
You might say they governed too well.
Or did they argue about who was going to get what office and what chair?
I was working for Jim Edgar, so I had a little bit of a look. I think, and if you'd ask Dwayne Nolan, he was in the majority, is they did so many things in their first 2 years. They only were in the majority 2 years. In 1994, that they were like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they just really did. I mean, they did workman's comp reform, which was ruled tort reform unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. They did a lot of big things, school reform back then.
Didn't Jim Edgar try to do something that would have fixed education at the time? Was basically
Well, he tried to do what I think is better than what we've done this time. He tried to make it less reliant on property taxes.
And why was that defeated?
Maybe the suburbs and the Senate Republicans defeated that one.
Yeah.
I mean, he tried to do that. I mean, it's interesting that in 1994, Don Clark Netsch ran on that plan, and he busted her on it, and then he went back and had almost a similar plan in his second term.
All right. Overall, when you, you're going to take a vacation anywhere? Like, you know, go somewhere to a beach and they say, what do you do? And say, I'm a politician from Illinois. Are you proud of
that? That's always wonderful. Yeah. You're in an airport and tell someone that. No big vacations.
Yeah. What are you going to do with your life?
People ask that, and I have no.
Come on,
plan.
You got to have some idea of what you're going to do. You've lived and breathed this stuff for 20 plus
years. I
probably
will be depressed, you know, just a little bit because I have done this. I'll miss the people. That's what I'll miss a lot.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to lobby. I never would have.
But do you know? I mean, you know, are you shutting? I mean, careful because you learned this with term limits. Yeah. You know what you say is recorded. You're not going to do anything like that?
I don't have any plans.
Okay.
I don't have, no one's offered me.
So, I mean, you're literally going to retire. Like, retire.
That is my plan.
How old are you? You're 58?
I'll be 59.
59. Okay, 59 you're too year. Young to not do anything.
I probably have to do. I don't like winters, so I'll probably try to get away for the wintertime.
You're going to, like, turn in like a snowbird.
Oh. Well, I've talked to Mike Tate. You know, remember Mike Tate?
I remember Mike Tate. What's Mike Tate's in Florida now?
He's in Florida right now.
Yeah?
And so he just moved down there, so I've talked to him and... He's enjoying life.
You're going to go sit around with a bunch of retired politicians and talk about the way things used to be?
He's a much better golfer, to say the least.
All right. I got to ask you before we get out of here. And you're, by the way, I think we should have Bill back on a regular occurrence up until January when he's done. Because I want his political insight now that he's like unfettered and not attached. You don't have to, you can be completely honest about everything. And you always have been.
Try to be.
Well, no. You've always come in. And I've always respected that about you. You will come in and take the tough questions and have the tough conversations. But when you look back at everything, and now you, it looks like Dan Calkins is going to be your successor. Are you surprised at that at all?
I've always liked Dan. You know, I always thought, I saw this picture over here, that Tuna would probably
be the next guy.
Do it. And, you know, the good Lord had that different.
The good Lord and some of your supporters. Now, come on. That was an organized thing.
For what?
When you were floating out there that you weren't going to run again to keep Tuna from running against you?
Oh, no, I that was not. I was never afraid of a Republican primary, I can tell you that.
You weren't afraid of Tuna?
No.
Really?
No.
Seriously?
No. I respected the man.
Didn't have supporters contacting people about putting out feelers about, well, this is going to be your last run to keep people out of that race?
No.
Never?
I would never have a supporter do that. I would give my word on that.
Ever?
Never.
Ever? Ever?
To stop someone to run against me?
That when Tuna was thinking about running.
First of all, he never told me that.
Okay, I'm just telling you, when he was thinking about running, there were phone calls going out at the same time. I received one. Kevin Berhaney received one. I'm not going to go into that. I'll tell you off there if you want to know. That there was feelers being out there that this is Bill's last run. He's not going to run again. This will be it. And that was, by the way, two races ago. So it clearly wasn't your last run.
No.
You didn't have anything to do with any of that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
All right. And you weren't afraid of Tune?
No. I was never afraid. I was never afraid of any... Never afraid of any opponent.
Why is that?
Just because you do your job. I mean, if you do your job, then I've always kind of been kind of perverse in this. It is like the competition.
Yeah.
I mean, a race is not a bad thing.
Yeah, but you haven't had a race in 20 years.
Have you
had a race in 20 years? The last race you had was Lee Holzapfel.
Right, correct. Not in Tier 1.
Yeah.
Not a Tier 1 race, but I was never... I mean, I always thought, you know, it was. I would never have been afraid of a race. No.
So, you're on the beach, not playing golf, whatever it is you're doing. Retired Illinois politician, mm-hmm. not in jail. See, that's the big difference because most are. You're proud or not proud of the 20 years you spent?
I think
doing
I'm
this?
Proud. I wish, in whole, if people would have listened to me in terms of the General Assembly, 18 years ago, I was talking about the budget's out of whack. If they would have listened to me and restrained the growth of spending, we would have not been in this mess now. We're still in a mess.
All right. Dan Calkins, you're going to support him wholeheartedly?
I went through the district last week with him, and yeah, I'm supporting him.
Okay.
He's a Republican. I would support any nominee. He's a friend of mine, so I support him, yeah.
Do you feel a little bad, this is the last question, about some of the things? I printed your Wikipedia page. It's three paragraphs. Now, I mean, I don't know that means anything. I don't think I even have one. So three paragraphs. Second paragraph, that you and State Representative Adam Brown tried to propose statehood for Cook County. Some of the stuff, the stunt stuff like that, even like I think the thing you did last week with Dan about, you know, wanting people to go to work on welfare.
That's not a stunt. We should talk about that because that's important.
Is that really important to most people in Illinois? I mean, like in their lives right now.
I don't know what they cover, but I mean, when you look at every state surrounding Illinois with the exception of Kentucky, they have a work requirement.
That's going to fix our problems?
I didn't say that. Nowhere did I say everything's going to be a panacea after we do this. But what I said was you cannot, and that's one of the problems in Illinois. We have too many people. I mean, the exponential growth of welfare over my period of time. I mean, that's what's causing the bankruptcy in Illinois.
That's it.
That's what's contributing to it.
Okay,
certainly.
It's a part of it. I'll agree with you. It's part of it. I don't think that. I mean, I think companies leaving, jobs leaving, people leaving, kids going to school out of state. I think there's a million reasons in the economy that you would get to before you would get to the fact that people on welfare need.
But I think because that is the biggest line item in the state budget right now. When 20 years ago,
food stamps.
No, Medicaid.
Okay, but that's not the same thing.
It's public assistance.
But that's not the same thing either.
No, when you're talking about SNAP,
you're talking about
benefits,
a tiny slice
when
of
you're talking
the
about SNAP, it's 100% federal funded. Now the federal government has a work requirement. So the federal government insists that you work, able-bodied people.
Yeah, that was under Bill Clinton.
That you work, and Illinois has asked for a waiver. What I said and what Dan Calkins said last week is Governor Ronnie shouldn't seek a waiver like he did in October of 2017.
All right, come back. This can't be the last.
No, fine.
All right, come back. State Representative Bill Mitchell, almost in retirement. We'll take a quick break. Here's Lindsay Romano with your 3-day forecast.